I have four questions and answers about Putin. Question one, why did Putin invade Ukraine now? He believed that Zelensky was moving against Russian interests and was mad that Zelensky hadn't been willing to make peace on Putin's terms. Secondly, he thought the US was weak. He looked at the disastrous exit from Afghanistan, polarized politics, and thought that the US was too distracted. Thirdly, he thought the Europeans were too distracted. The Germans were going through a new coalition. The French were in the lead up to the election. Britain was preoccupied with Brexit. He just did not believe that the Western alliance would impose really tough sanctions on him, that there would be no unity on that. His invasion was based on a number of serious miscalculations. Number one, the Russian army isn't as strong as he thought it was. Secondly, the Ukrainians fought back instead of collapsing in 72 hours. They're well-trained and they are fighting for a cause, whereas Russian teenage recruits don't even know why they're there. Another miscalculation was transatlantic unity. The Europeans stepped up to the plate. They joined the United States in presenting a united front against Russia, and the Japanese, the South Koreans, and other Asian countries did as well. And they imposed very tough sanctions on Russia. Where are we now? The Russians were unable to take Kiev, which they thought they were going to take in 72 hours. They've now retreated and they're focusing on the southeastern Donbas region. They've completely decimated Mariupol, the port city where allegedly they used some chemical weapons. And they have managed to cut off Odessa from the rest of Ukraine. The Ukrainians cannot export their grain, not because of sanctions, but because the Russians have cut them off. Putin would like to announce on the 9th of May, Victory Day, that he has had a major success in Ukraine and that they've taken back the Donbas. Let's see whether he is able to do that. We have a united West. Yes, the US, Europe, and our Asian allies are together on imposing sanctions, but the rest of the world is not. It's not only China, it's India has refused to condemn Russia to join sanctions. Other major countries, South Africa, the Middle East, Latin America, Mexico, Brazil, countries in Southeast Asia, in Africa, none of them are willing to condemn Russia. And those countries, if you look at the UN votes, represent more than half of the world's population. The best outcome would be a negotiated settlement. However, I do not believe the Russians are at the moment interested in a negotiated settlement. But if they were, the Ukrainians have said that they would give up trying to join NATO, but they would want security guarantees from the West. They've said that they're willing to discuss the status of Crimea and of the Donbas with Russia. But the condition for making these concessions is for Russia to withdraw at least those troops that invaded on the 24th of February. We have had no sign from the Russians of any concessions that they would make. If there isn't a negotiated settlement, this war can continue for a long time. It can be a low level, if you like, war of attrition. It could also escalate. We've had signs of a possible use of a chemical agent. Putin has also threatened to use nuclear weapons. They're not off the table. Once the US and NATO will have permanent troops on the eastern frontline states, Putin's also achieved what he always wanted to prevent. Finland and Sweden are now apparently poised to join NATO, something that they refused to do for the past 70 years.
Why is China supporting Russia in this Ukraine war?
Even though the Chinese have very significant economic interests in the relationship with the West, with Europe and the US, and not with Russia, they won't join in condemnation of that because they still see an authoritarian Russia as their partner pushing back against US and Western hegemony.
I'm confused by India's neutrality. I thought India joined Team USA. What happened?
India has their own concerns about China, Chinese-Pakistani relations. And so they see Russia as an important balancer against China. They have a tradition during the Cold War of being neutral and a lot of suspicion of the United States. In large parts of the rest of the world, a lot of this is determined not because Russia's great, it's their suspicion of the United States, resentment against the United States, and hypocrisy. They will point to Vietnam, to Iraq, to Afghanistan.
Do you think Israel's more neutral policy relates to its large Russian Jewish population in Israel, or the risk that Israel may need to evacuate the Ukrainian Jewish population, or is it its desire to work with Russia in Syria and Iran?
Israel has finally come and it did vote to oust Russia from the United Nations Human Rights Council, and it has condemned Russia, but it's not joining the sanctions. Their major concern, it's Iranian activities in Syria, and without cooperation from Russia, they can't fight back against Hezbollah. The domestic population is extremely complicated. Natan Sharansky, the famous Soviet dissident, he has condemned his government for not doing more because he's always been very anti-Putin. Avigdor Lieberman, who comes from Moldova, had a very cozy relationship with Putin, and he won't criticize Russia. So I think it's 3 million former Soviet Jews that live in Israel. There's no unanimity on this. And then there are the business ties. These wealthy Russian Jewish oligarchs have ties with Israel and the Putin regime as well. Memories of the way that Ukrainians treated Jews in the past isn't very good. As the Israelis say, Russia's like a neighbor, has enabled Israel to carry out all kinds of strikes against Hezbollah and Iranian-backed forces in Syria that are threatening to Israel.
What about the developing world?
None of the BRICS countries have condemned Russia, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. Mexico, do you know that after the war broke out, the Mexican parliament formed a Russia-Mexico friendship caucus? Brazil, Bolsonaro feels that they've been neglected by the Biden administration. The attitude towards the United States is clearly not what it used to be.
Why did Western analysts and their political leaders underestimate the risk of war in Ukraine?
Most Western analysts, and I would include myself, looked at Putin's previous behavior. The grievances he's had against Ukraine, against the West, they've been on display since 2007 when he made his infamous speech at the Munich Security Conference. And he's always said what he said about Ukraine not really being a real country. In 2008, Russia went to war with Georgia, but they didn't go to Tbilisi. They didn't take out President Mikhail Saakashvili, whom they loathed. In 2014, they took Crimea in a bloodless coup, if you like, and then they started the war in the Donbas region, but it was limited. Most people thought that what Putin was going to do was to take more of the Donbas, what the Russians are trying to do now. Most of us realize that Putin is now a much greater risk taker than he was 8 years ago, and it doesn't have this kind of pragmatic sense of where to stop.
Putin made a speech at the outset of the war in Ukraine. What did you make of Putin's justification of the invasion?
He seized on this Nazi trope because that dehumanizes the Ukrainians. It's just like World War II. We're going to get rid of those Nazis. The other part of his speech was to essentially say it's the United States and NATO that's backing these Nazis, and it's using Nazi Ukraine as a platform to either invade Russia, to threaten it. Foreign Minister Lavrov said, this isn't really a war about Ukraine. We're at war with the West, with the United States, which is the way that they see it.
Why is Putin's popularity increasing during the war?
So for most Russians, it's becoming increasingly difficult to have access to other sources of information. And they're just seeing state-run TV 24/7. We're fighting the Nazis. We're winning. The massacre in Bucha, it's done by the Ukrainians themselves or fake actors. Russia is only targeting military targets and everything else is fake. A lot of the recruits come from rural parts of Russia and they're particularly badly informed.
You've explained how the war in Ukraine is in Russia's interest. But why does it make sense for Putin personally?
Putin's done pretty well out of the collapse of the Soviet Union, if you look at how much wealth he and his comrades have accumulated. He would show up to world meetings, and he's an impressive, strong man. He rebuilt the Russian economy. He seemed to create stability there. And everyone thought he's an autocrat that we can do business with.
How did Putin miscalculate the extent of the sanctions?
He thought that the sanctions that would be imposed on Russia would be similar to those in 2014. There'd be sanctions on banks and individuals, but he did not believe that the Europeans would agree to these full frontal financial sanctions. The export controls are affecting their ability to get spare parts, to fly their planes for their entire industrial base. He was an intent on this invasion, and he thinks that Russia can weather these sanctions, but it's going to be hard to see in the longer run how they do.
Do you agree with the political scientist John Mearsheimer, who believes that U.S. actions to expand NATO encourage Ukraine to join EU and set off the war?
Yeah, I'm afraid I don't give very much credence to it. NATO expansion is not what has caused this. The West is not responsible for this. Putin's desire to get back these lands has existed from the time that the Soviet Union collapsed and he lost his job as a KGB case officer. Before 2014, a majority of Ukrainians did not want to join NATO. Ukraine had neutrality in its constitution. In the last year since the annexation of Crimea, the Ukrainians changed their mind on this. Where I would fault the West is in 2008, when there was a NATO summit and the Bush administration did push a membership action plan for Ukraine, and the Germans and French were adamantly against it, they had a compromise communique which said Ukraine and Georgia will join NATO. Ukraine was not on any track for NATO membership. It is in black and white on that communique, and that was very much a mistake because it provided something for the Russians to seize on.
On May 9th, Putin will celebrate Victory Day for the war in Ukraine. What will Putin say he won?
Maybe by May 9th, they can say we took Mariupol, more of the Donbass, cut off Ukraine from the Black Sea. We've won. He can't go back and say we've denazified the country because Zelensky's still in power. And denazification was a code word for regime change in Kiev. But he could present a territorial gain for that.
What insight do you have on the Ukrainian refugee crisis?
He thought that creating refugees would destabilize Europe. If you have large numbers of Ukrainian refugees living in different parts of Europe and integrating into Europe, you could get a European body politic that becomes even harder in its views of Russia.
What happens next with China and the Ukraine war?
So far, the Chinese have continued to back Russia. They repeat all of the Russian tropes, including what happened at Bucha was either done by the Ukrainians or actors. China always used to say, we don't believe in solving things through violence and military means, and they're not saying that very much anymore. Major Chinese banks are complying with the sanctions. We'll have to see how much the Chinese help the Russians evade sanctions going forward. For Xi Jinping, the relationship with Vladimir Putin is very important. He's a fellow authoritarian leader who's increasingly dependent on China. And if China really wants to push against an American-dominated world order, he needs Putin. The February the 4th declaration that was signed between Putin and Xi Jinping in Beijing, it said it's a partnership that knows no limits. It's better than an alliance, right?
I end each episode on a note of optimism. Angela, what are you optimistic about?
I'm optimistic about the way that Europe and the Asian allies have responded to this. We just hope that as the sanctions continue to affect us, that we can keep that unity and that solidarity of purpose there, because that will be important.
Putin will demand an end to sanctions as part of any settlement negotiation. What happens next?
Well, he's only going to get sanctions lifted if the Russians do what they promised to do. It's incredibly difficult to lift U.S. sanctions, particularly if the U.S. Congress has anything to do with it.
Since you predict that neither side wants to negotiate, do you see a long, protracted war?
Yes, it's going to continue for a long time, or at least as long as Putin's in the Kremlin. We don't know how long he'll be president.